Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from irisportsdaily.com. I am your host, Greg Flamong, and filling in today in South Bend, on site, boots on the ground, is Christian McCollum. He was able to attend the opening of spring practice today. He's got a lot of insights there. Jamie had something come up, so hopeful he can pop into the show later. But if not, Christian is going to take the vice captain seat over there, and he's going to hold it down while Jamie's out taking care of business. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If this is your first time catching us, please hit the like button. Please hit subscribe. Please hit the notification bell. Soon, whatever it is, we are going live. Links to this podcast are going to be in the description below. Today, we're going to be pretty clear what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the opening of spring practice, all the observations that Christian had. He had a lot of time. He spent a lot of time watching the early enrollees, and it's a fun group to be watching this year with CJ Carr at quarterback. Micah Gilbert apparently had a good practice at wide receiver. Cam Williams, Kingston Viliamuasa, and some of the running backs as well. So thank you, Christian, for coming on, filling in. It's great to have you today. First of all, how are you feeling? How are things out in South Bend?
It's good. It's nice weather out here today. It's not crazy balmy or anything like that, but it wasn't freezing when Matt Freeman picked me up this morning. We were inside, thankfully, but you know, weather's nothing to complain about. There's a few recruits on campus, so it's not frigid or anything like that. They were driving around with golf carts.
Yeah.
A lot of light jackets, so everything's good.
How's Matt doing? Is he stressed out? Is he in a grumpy mood? What's his vibe like today?
You know, so I flew in to Chicago, and then I took the train to South Bend, and Matt offered to pick me up, which I thought was great. But I get off the train, and there's all these people there welcoming their loved ones, and they got signs, and they're hugging, and they're taking pictures. And I'm looking around like, where's Matt? Oh, this guy's just in the parking lot, just waiting on me? Like, no, you know, reception or anything like that? So, but he's okay. I'll catch back up with him again later. He wasn't too grumpy.
You can't make a sign.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a big deal, man. I'm looking around, trying to find my loved one. Nope, nothing.
Matt's not big for the big ceremonial greetings. But it's nice of him to come pick you up. That's good stuff. You know, it's ISD, right? We're like a family, and Matt, that's how Matt is, man. It's all good. It's important to have that family atmosphere. And it's important to dress nice and to feel like you're a part of something, right, Christian? And if you want to feel a part of something, if you want to feel a part of the Notre Dame community a little bit, and you also want to look good, then what you can do is you can go to ESQ Clothing, which is founded by Notre Dame alum Ga Wang. You've seen ESQ on all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches with over a decade of making the best custom clothing available. ESQ will help you look and feel your best in 2024 from a perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt, or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season. Check out Ga's amazing work at esqclothing.com. Book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention ISD and get 10% off your entire purchase and become part of the ESQ family. All right, Christian. Let's do some odds and ends real quick. Just some news items. Marcus Freeman did his post-practice press conference to open spring ball, a couple news items. Chad Bowden is now basically the general manager of Notre Dame football. That was kind of something that we saw. We know that Michigan was coming hard after him, and they were going to offer him a similar role. And so Notre Dame stepped up and gave him that role. He's the AD of player personnel, assistant AD of player personnel, which is essentially he's going to be the general manager of the football program. Jay Brown moves into Chad Bowden's position. So everyone kind of moves up there, which is good. I mean, I think, you know, Marcus Freeman clearly values him and what he brings to the program. I know you, I mean, maybe you can talk to, because you're so heavy in recruiting, like you can talk about how important Chad Bowden is to the recruiting operation for Notre Dame.
Yeah, no, he's vital. He's vital. He's on it 365 days a year. And it's a lot of organization, a lot of, you know, evaluation. And with Chad, you get a lot of energy, right? He's the one out there jumping around in the leprechaun costume and stuff like that. And I know maybe some of our older, you know, viewers might think that kind of stuff is silly. But I'll tell you who doesn't think it's silly, and that's the recruits. Or maybe they think it's silly, but they like it, right?
Right.
And just that energy is infectious, and it's not just for the kids, right? So, you know, a lot of times a 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid can be excited by that stuff. But Chad also is able to relate to the parents. You know, a lot of parents will tell me how much they appreciate Chad, and he has, you know, he has a knack for having kind of, you know, being able to establish real, genuine relationships with these players and their families. And you know, I wrote about that a lot when, you know, Marcus Freeman became head coach and how the whole thing would shift. And you can be that guy, you can be fun and you can be cool and you can, you know, play video games, listen to music and all that stuff. But if it's not real, if it's not genuine, eventually it's gonna, you know, it's not gonna work. And mm-hmm. with Chad, it really is genuine.
Yeah. I mean, he wants it, right? He's out there and he gets it. How I wonder how this role, what is he taking on in this role, and how will his role change on kind of a day-to-day, week-to-week basis?
Well, I'm still waiting on the details of exactly that, but how it'll change is, rather than just being in charge of recruiting in general, mm-hmm. he's in charge of the entire roster, the makeup of the entire roster, which, and he's at the top of the hierarchy, right? So, and you know, talking about, you know, all his energy and all that stuff, I think that's what he's known for. Mm-hmm. But he's also really big into evaluation. He kind of looks at this stuff, you know, very scientifically, in terms of, you know, oh, this guy's not just some awesome, you know, player. This is, you know, a reason why he thinks he can be good. And obviously he's young, but he has a lot of experience. A lot of times they'll trace things back to, you know, this guy right here in high school reminds me of exactly the way this guy was at Cincinnati when he was in high school. So he'll have the evaluation part will be, really, really big as he gets older. Obviously the portal, is a big deal. So he'll be looking at that as well and kind of having his hands on that. It's just really kind of like they've created an overseer position, and yeah. He's sort of the president of that at this point.
Yeah. I was wondering if this would mean his influence in the portal would be even more, kind of felt there. So that'll be interesting to track as well. Cause it sounded to me like when you told me before, like he's going to kind of oversee the entire roster and all the player personnel. I thought, oh, that'll be interesting from a portal perspective. So you were at practice today.
Yep.
And you saw, you focused a lot on the early enrollees, right?
Yep.
We're talking a little bit before, you had some questions going into just as a recruit about CJ Carr, the quarterback. And it sounds like he might have answered some of those questions and then some for you. Tell us what you saw from CJ Carr today.
Yeah, so, I mean, anyone that's seen CJ Carr for the last few years, the one thing you know is he's super polished. He's super right. smooth. You just watch him move around. And every time you see him, you're reminded exactly how smooth he was, right, and how polished he was, which kind of comes, you know, with the fact of, you know, just kind of how he grew up and, you know, his legacy and all that stuff. But in my settings, when I've seen CJ, when I had a chance to see him, I saw him at like a combine in San Antonio when he was maybe a sophomore. I saw him at Invasion later that year. And I'd seen some, you know, high school game tape, obviously. He just never had to, he wasn't asked to, right? Like really let it go, let his arm go. Mm. When I saw him at Invasion, it was the day he committed. He was out there, he was having a good time, and you could tell he was just tossing the ball around for the most part. Really smooth, super accurate, but never really, you know, let me freaking gun this thing in there, right? And same with his high school, you know, film. There's a lot of, you know, videos of guys kind of running wide open, and he obviously has great touch and great accuracy, and he's putting it there. But I just never had the opportunity to see him really zip balls. And so that was a question I had about him coming in. And no, not today, no. He was like he made a point to zip every ball in there. The velocity. Now I'm not saying he's Josh Allen or John Elway or anything like that. But in terms of seeing this kid use his arm, let's see his arm strength. Okay. Yep. It's there. The other thing, and obviously for him, this wasn't his first practice. He was there for the bowl game. I think that was probably helpful. It certainly looked like he'd been there even longer than that. He had a true command of, you know, the operation, you know, what they were trying to do. He didn't look out of place. He wasn't, you know, asking questions and saying this guy over here. He was in control. And obviously, like always, he was super, super smooth, very accurate. And then you got into some one-on-ones, made great throws. Then you get into to team and Skelly and stuff like that, and you can see the decision-making now, right? And it's quick, and it's decisive, and it's almost always correct. So he really, really impressed me. The other thing I liked about him is, you know, he doesn't cheat the drill, right? So if they're doing one-on-ones and he only has one receiver over here, he's not just taking the snap and looking over here. He's taking the snap like he would, looking to the other side, looking down the middle of the field, and then coming back. He's not, you know, cheating the drill, like I said. That just kind of shows he's trying to get himself better at all, you know, all aspects. And, you know, every time someone made a good play, Mike Gilbert, who we're talking about, had a couple of great plays. You know, CJ was one of the first guys over there to embrace him and celebrate with him. All that. I just was very, very impressed with CJ today.
There's like an attention to detail to that you're talking about, because, you know, you're going through like an imaginary progression, or you're looking off the imaginary safety. A lot of that helps in one-on-one. So a lot of the time what you'll see from a quarterback is, it's kind of like you said, like if they'll go back and they'll just get the ball and they'll just look at their receiver, like certain routes have a timing
cadence.
To them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they take place in the context of an actual play. So sometimes a quarterback will get out of sequence because they're not actually going through what they're supposed to. It sounds like he's doing that. That's really good. I did not think that he would really be in a position to like raise eyebrows at all, just because of the fact that there's three other quarterbacks. You know, there's Riley Leonard, there's Steve Angeli, and there's Kenny Minchie. Like, they have all these guys that they need to get going. I did not think there would be a situation where it's like, yeah, CJ Carr can actually stand out at all. And just from some of the questions that Marcus Freeman got at the press conference, it did seem like they tried to rep all four quarterbacks in that. I'm wondering, first of all, how did that go? Like, was it a seamless thing? Did it seem like this guy's kind of getting shortchanged today? How did that go?
No, it was very systematic, right? They a lot of times they were split off into twos. And a lot of the indie stuff, they were going two at a time, right? So you go two at a time, two balls in the air at a time, just boom, boom, boom down the pitch them. Then a lot of the team stuff was split up anyways. It wasn't necessarily all run on the other end, but there was more run on one end than the other. So you had two quarterbacks on each end, just kind of splitting up the reps, rotating through. They all did seem to get a lot of reps. I was mostly focused on the early enrollees, so I had my eye on CJ Carr a lot, but, you know, saw plenty of Riley Leonard, obviously, as well as Angeli, and Minchie kind of went. Every time CJ went, they were kind of rotating. So when you're running kind of two offenses at the same time, you're able to really, really get those reps in there. And, you know, they were coming in like, you know, just basically like a fire drill. You know, there was, you know, hustling to get into the line, and that kind of urgency, and, you know, it was a quick practice, fast-paced, and everyone's on top of it.
So this is where having someone like Mike Denbrock can be beneficial, in that he's been around, he knows how to work in this kind of situation, he knows how to get the most out of the practice time, and to get guys like multiple players like this the kind of reps that they need to be developed and to be evaluated by the coaches, right? And so, like, this is just one of those things where it's not an X and O thing, it's not scheme. But it kind of goes to show, like, when you have experience, like, this really helps in terms of building the football team and kind of getting the team, you know, ready to perform and ready to kind of execute the things that they're being taught. Joe Burrow asked the question, what's the reason to have spring practice right before spring break? So spring practice has to take place within a certain time frame for the university, right? And so it's going to coincide with spring break in some kind of way. And so it just depends for Marcus Freeman. Like, the first few practices are not padded, right? So sometimes you want to get those unpadded practices out of the way, so when you come back, maybe you have one more unpadded practice and then you put on the pads, right? You want to break it up that way. There might be other reasons for that we don't really know about, but it's going to coincide with spring break no matter what. Based on the schedule and the way that the university schedule is set up. So that's kind of why that is. The university doesn't cater to the football program in terms of their scheduling. It's something that I've kind of asked about in the past, and that's been the answer. Like, the football team has to work around the university, not the other way around.
Yeah, you know how it is. Football coaches, the first thing when it comes to starting the season or practice, they just want to get them acclimation days out of the way so they can get the pads on. So you just get an acclimation day out of the way before spring practice. So now you only have to get two in before you can get the pads on.
Right. Yeah. So that's a lot of the time. That's what it is. Talked about the wide receivers a little bit. Let's go into Micah Gilbert, because I know you're watching him along with Cam Williams. And then we'll go into the receivers at large, because I looking at some of the video, and then Matt's got practice clips up on the Irish Sports Daily YouTube page. You want to go check those out, because those are going to be really good. I gave him a look, and I have a broader picture of the wide receivers too. But talk to us about Micah Gilbert and Cam Williams.
Yeah, so I got a chance to see Cam Williams in person in San Antonio when he was healthy. He ended up getting banged up by day two, but I mean, they were doing walkthroughs down in San Antonio, and I was thoroughly impressed with him. And I still am not sure I've seen him run his hardest, except for maybe one little small brief play in San Antonio. But he's everything, you know, you've been told he is in terms of his size, his athletic ability and speed. You know, so I was kind of excited to see Gilbert a little bit more. They both are big dudes. You know, Mike Gilbert is every bit what he's listed. And it is the first practice out there. You want to see, are these receivers, they catch the ball with their hands, you know? Yeah, the first thing they are, they look right, then they're catching the ball with their hands. Then you challenge them a little bit, you're running hitches. Are they actually coming back to the ball and catching the ball with their hands? They're doing that. Mike Brown had a couple good drills in there that really made you force the receivers to come back to the ball, which I thought was really, really good. And they continue to catch the ball with their hands. And it's not just that they're catching the ball with their hands. To me, it shows a ton of self-confidence in each, right? They're not scared to go out there, and they're not thinking, oh, let me catch it like this because I don't want to drop a ball on my first practice at Notre Dame. Those guys look very, very confident. And then, you know, he had some, you know, easy throws in individual where it's, you know, over the shoulder, and, you know, they show the athleticism there. When they got to one-on-ones, you know, I wouldn't say Gilbert dominated one-on-ones. I'm pretty sure he did pretty well. He had one rep with Ben Morrison. They're really going at it with just a simple hitch route. They were going at it, and Morrison knocked it away, but it was like – it was a battle, right? And it was like, okay, all right. Cam Williams had one deep ball. I mean, you're not going to overthrow this kid. He was – you know, it was a deep ball, and he had to turn the Jets on for a second, and then he had to turn them off. And it ended up getting knocked away because it kind of hung up in the air a little bit. But he looked good. Then when you got to team, like, that's where Gilbert took over. I mean, he had multiple long plays. You know, I think one was probably just a deep in, one was a go, but then he caught short passes, intermediate passes. He had a dig. That was a nice dig where he, you know, kind of settled down right in the hole, made a catch. Cam Williams had a couple plays as well, but, you know, Mikey Gilbert was the one that was really, really taking over and turning heads. And it was one practice. It was one practice, right. But, like, that he's capable of doing that in alone is really, really encouraging.
Who is he doing that against, if you remember?
Everybody, especially since most of his, you know, real eye-popping plays came in team. So it was like, you know, are they in, you know, zone? Man, who was it? Hard to say as they're just kind of going rapid fire like that. But, I mean, he was running down the field a couple times, and nobody could catch him for deep, you know, scores. I believe he was the one. It might have been Mitchell. Someone caught a deep touchdown, and they were celebrating. Everyone was going crazy. And Freeman alluded to it when he was talking about Denbrock in the press conference, where Mike Denbrock was yelling. You would have thought he was angry until you listened to what he was saying. He was telling him to hustle back to the huddle, stop celebrating. He's like, that's what we do. Like that, he's trying to get those guys to understand, this is what we do. We make big plays like that. I actually think it was Mitchell. I think he might have went up and got a one-on-one ball over somebody. But as far as, like, Gilbert and Williams, they definitely look like they belong. Like not just belong, like they're, like, standout guys. And Gilbert potentially, just the way he looked today, is maybe a potential standout guy, like, sooner than later.
I mean, it's definitely heartening to see, you know, to hear about it, right? Like, in your first practice, you go out there and you're making plays. Like, that's a big deal, period, right? It kind of doesn't matter who it's against. Like you said, just the ability to be able to do it, right? Just to get open in a big time, you know, environment like that. Watching the video, like they have so much, there's so many more athletes now, like guys going through like the drill you were talking about where Mike Brown set up two bags, you run through the bags, you make the break, and then you have to come back through the bags in order to come, like it forces you to come back to the ball. It's a good drill, first of all, in terms of just like it creates the habit of you got to come back. The other part is like watching these different types of bodies. That's the other thing. It's like so many different types of bodies now, right? Like Chris Mitchell is kind of a more of a slender guy. You have Jaden Harrison, who's like a short, stockier type of guy, like very powerful runner. You've got Micah Gilbert, who's kind of a bigger guy. You have Deon Colsey, who's a bigger guy. You have Jaden Greyhouse, who's kind of a bigger guy, right? Cam Williams is tall, but he's not like super thick, right? Mm-hmm. He's got that kind of Will Fuller build to him. So all these different types.
A little thicker than Will Fuller. Give him a little credit.
Well, but the same kind of build. You know what I mean? Yeah, like he's not like a thicker like Jaden Thomas type. And then KK Smith, right? Who's a smaller guy. When Jordan Faison, kind of gets back into it, like he's a smaller guy. So they have different body types, different skill sets, and just like kind of the depth there that I think that really helps. Like And there's a question here about, Ryan is talking about, and we're going to get this a lot. Like this is every single conversation in the spring. It's like if one group does great, another group has to look poorly, right? Like that's just the way it goes. With the deep ball talk devil's advocate, is it possible it's indicative of poor safety play? It is possible, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously you get beat deep on a play. Any DB coach will tell you like that's not okay. That's unacceptable. We don't give up touchdowns, right? So someone's doing something wrong. But I think, you know, if Notre Dame fans and, you know, analysts of the team want this team to be an explosive team, like, do you think that now, like, this is probably a bad example because LSU's defense was terrible. But, like, do you think that, like, Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers weren't going crazy in LSU practices? Like, of course they were, right? Like, that when you have talented players, that's what they're going to do. Now, obviously, the LSU defense is poor, but, like,
someone's got to win.
Someone has to win. And you have to have the ability to do it as well, right? And the fact that, like, they're making plays deep and they're making plays down the field, A, someone has to win. Someone has to get open. And B, the quarterback's got to deliver it to them, right? So, like, these are all good things, right? Like, you can't – Notre Dame wants to have an explosive offense. They want to have a very good offense. But you can't have that if you don't have the guys. So, like, now watching them in practice and watching them in the clips, like, they do have – the guys, they do have the different types of athletes. Now it's just about honing it in. Curious, I want to transition to the running backs here. Kedron Young and Aeneas Williams are both on campus. How did they look? Did they look like they fit in to that Notre Dame kind of running back room?
Yeah, so I wrote about this when I wrote about Aeneas Williams. He makes things look too easy, like easier than they should be. And it's like almost like everything he does. And I wrote about it, but like, McCullough had him doing this drill where he was rolling balls and they had to shuffle and then get down and get the ball back side to side. And he was moving laterally and keeping them low. And it was like, oh, this is a good drill. And you saw the first few guys go and they were, you know, working at it. And it was like, oh, that's good. And then, you know, Aeneas got up and it was like he wasn't even trying. It was like something that was like beneath him. And I was like, wow. And then the same kind of bit when it's like he goes out there and catches passes. It's like, oh, this kid, if he was just a receiver today, and they had him at receiver, I bet he would have been one of the standouts. The way he's able to run routes and just how he catches the ball, you know, just the same as Mike and Cam Williams. And that's something he did a lot of in high school, obviously. It's something he's going to be asked to do here. He just is such a natural pass catcher. Now, for the most part, you know, you go to these practices, especially install and stuff like this, a lot of the running back stuff is simply just, you know, take a handoff and run straight, you know, individual drills, not much to see. But he did have at least one big run in a team where he just kind of, it wasn't bottled up or anything, but everybody kind of, the whole defense kind of collapsed and boom, he went and he was gone. It was burst and there was no catching him. So he just seems like the kind of kid who will be able to do anything you ask. You know, obviously they weren't, you know, picking up blitzes and stuff like that today.
Right.
But, you know, everything he's asked to do, he did very, very easily. And then as far as Kedron goes, same deal when it comes to pass catching, right? I know a lot of people just look at him and maybe he'll be estimated. Not that estimated didn't catch a screen or an angle route. But when he was out there, you know, when they kind of put everyone together to catch passes, I was like, damn, is that Kedren or is that some receiver that I don't know about? Like, he really, really looked comfortable catching the ball. Same deal as far as, you know, running. A lot of times it's just, you know, taking simple handoffs against air. But the one thing I've always been told about Kedren, Notre Dame's convinced, is like, this kid is not just like a power. He's not like a in between the tackles, pick up 3 yards type deal. This kid can move. He's got some shake to him. He's very, very light on his feet. He's faster than people give him credit for. I do think he's going to be a good one. This is, they got a really, really good tandem here.
I believe he's their biggest running back as well.
In he terms might be, of weight. Yeah.
I believe that's correct. And now Devin Ford, someone brought up Devin Ford, has moved to safety. That's something that is interesting to me, right? Like, a lot of the time you go from, you know, offense to defense or defense to offense or whatever it may be, you want kind of like a runway and some time to kind of develop there. Like Xavier Watts, like, he didn't become an All-American in his first, it was his third year into the move from safety or for the move from wide receiver. So, you know, where he can fit in, I mean, maybe he's a natural, right? I don't know. It does seem like, it does seem like that's kind of a move towards, like, I want to be a special teams guy, really. Marcus Freeman kind of mentioned he wants to work on his tackling, move over to defense full time. You could work on your tackling all the time. And speaking of safety, Luke Talich, who I believe made a couple plays today, he's now on scholarship. So he's a scholarship player for Notre Dame. I think everyone kind of knew coming from, I think it was Montana, coming from, is that correct? Yeah, coming from Montana. He had scholarship offers to Pac-12 schools, turned him down. He wanted to come to Notre Dame, took a preferred walk-on position. Now he's a scholarship player. And I think there's a good chance he's going to get a lot of run too. He's a really good athlete. And he's got a lot of size as well. So he's someone to monitor throughout the spring here. It's interesting. You mentioned Kedren Young running, Wyoming, right? I knew I had that wrong. Luke Talich is from Wyoming. Kedren Young on the clips that Matt put out there, he's running a slant route. Looks good running the slant route.
Yeah. You know?
So that's a big deal for those freshman running backs to try to get onto the field and create something. If Aeneas Williams, like you say, has the speed that you kind of talked about, he got into the open and he was gone from this. If he's like a speed guy, like he has the speed to really compete and run away from people, that kind of changes things for me in terms of how I view him and how I view kind of what he can be on the team and what his role can be. Cause I don't know. Like, I just had questions about that.
Well, I'm not quite ready to say like, he's like a long speed guy, right? Like it was more his burst that was impressive in terms of getting from the line of scrimmage to maybe 20, 25 yards, right? Like in a game, is he housing that sucker? I don't know, but it's definitely an explosive play, right? So I don't know yet if he's, you know, if once he's in open field, nobody's capable of catching him. But the burst is definitely there.
Yeah. Munir Prince, I believe, is who's going to call him that. So anything on the offensive line from you today? I know that
they were mostly outside, so I didn't get to see them at all when they're outside. And then when they came inside for team, Peter Jones and Styles Prescott didn't get any reps. I did get a chance to see Anthony Knapp. And he's undersized guy, right? He's been undersized since he was undersized as a high school prospect. So you're definitely gonna be undersized when you get here. But he held up, right? He wasn't going against, you know, Botello and anybody like that. But when he was in there, I think he went against Bryce Young a couple of times. He definitely didn't get moved around, right? He didn't get dominated or anything like that. I think it's encouraging that he was able to kind of, you know, stand his ground and be able to get in there. He's going to definitely need to add some weight. That's pretty much all I saw from the O-line.
Okay. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping as well. Armel Mukum had a shoulder injury. He had to get, he had the labrum tear, had to get cleaned up. Logan Thomas as well. So I think we noticed that Logan Thomas came in light. And it was like, man, was he a wide receiver? Like, what's going on here? It seems like he had the surgery on his shoulder a couple months ago, and then he probably lost weight from that. I know the weight's coming back up now. So he's got, like, that's going to, you got to stop working out right? Yeah. So that's you're gonna drop weight when that sort of thing happens. Aiden Gobira is still recovering from his ACL injury. Mitchell Evans, Kevin Bauman, all recovering from their ACL. Bo Collins and Rod Hurd are in South Bend. They're living in South Bend. They can attend practices, but they are not official students of the university yet. So therefore they can't partake in the physical part of spring practice. They can be there and they can take mental reps and things of that nature, but not on practice yet.
What a time to be alive, huh? When he was like, they're both students at their old institutions. I was like, I swore I saw Bo Collins out there today. He's like, but they're here. They're living in South Bend. And I was like, all right. Okay.
What a time to be alive. It seems like just let them practice. Like, who cares? Like, I what's the problem? Like, I don't understand why they couldn't do that. Whatever, it's fine.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the
maybe
the
there's like insurance, I mean, stuff.
I'm sure there's insurance. Who's gonna pay for it?
And, right.
I mean, you know, let me practice if you're just gonna let anyone out there and practice, right?
Yeah. Ryan points out, Marcus Freeman said right tackle is a battle. Does that mean left tackle isn't? I would assume that Jagusaw is going to be the guy at left tackle for right now. And right tackle is going to be between Tosh Baker and Emil Wagner. That's my presumption. People noticed Notre Dame updated the heights and weights on the official website yesterday. Emil Wagner at 281. If that's correct, that's concerning as far as his ability to be like a viable player. You can't be a major college offensive tackle and be 281. I don't care how strong you are. You just can't. Yeah, you got to be bigger than that. So that's something to monitor going forward. Jordan Clark. It was interesting to me how Marcus Freeman essentially said he's the number one nickel. He's going to be the nickel. It was like, okay, great. We're not even going to go through practice. Like, he's going to be the guy, but he had some quad soreness, so they wanted to hold him out. That's kind of another part of, like, you know, why you, it's like you have a guy who his quads are sore, he has some soreness. You're going on spring break. All right, let's just hold him out and make sure that he can come back and be ready to go. Let me see some other news and notes from the practice here. Jordan Faison he's full-time lacrosse, right? So Jordan Faison is going to be a lacrosse player. Marcus Freeman pointed out that because he's doing a ton of running around and there's a lot of, there's a lot of activity as a lacrosse player, they're going to let lacrosse dictate however much he's around the Notre Dame football team. And that's not, it didn't sound like that's the case with Drake Bowen.
Nope.
Baseball obviously is not as physically taxing. So it seems like Drake is going to be mostly around the football team.
He was asked specifically, is Bowen all in on baseball? And then he didn't say no, but he definitely didn't say yes in that context.
Right. So it seems to me that he can do both. Everyone's
done it before. Easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of linebackers, Kingston Viluamuasa, tell us about him. I mean, Marcus Freeman was very effusive in his praise. Basically said, hey, I saw this. You see a guy who comes in, you think he's got a chance. And the way that he said that makes it seem like he wants KVA to be a player this year. What did you see from him today?
It made me feel better, right? Because that's what I saw, right? And you're sitting there and you're watching and you're going, man, are you just like overhyping this guy in your own mind? Or do you even know what you're talking about? And so it's just like there's something about him, just the way he moves, where he moves, the kind of the surety with which he moves. He just seems so comfortable and knows what he's doing. You're just like, you know, I was here when Manti was here. So I'm not trying to say he's Manti. But like he's just, and I saw it down in San Antonio as well. It's a combination of, you know, size, speed, athleticism, and instincts. So you put that all together and it's a special player. Then you kind of get to the character piece of it, kind of the way he kind of carries himself, and then add in more than just instincts. When I say instincts, it's like he knows how to slide by a block before it comes. You know, he knows how to get to the football, but like his football intelligence, he looked closer to CJ Carr in terms of like how sure he was about what he was doing out there than some, you know, brand new freshman who's looking around not knowing what the hell to do. Now, at the same time, Jack Kaiser's helping him out, pointing out what to do before everything. But it's like he goes through a drill and, like, did it perfectly. No reason to stop, no reason that, you know, to tell him what's going on. And it's just – he's just always in the right place. And when I got a chance to see him tackle in San Antonio, guys like him, I like to – they're like erasers, right? You don't even have to watch the play. You're not even rooting for him to make the tackle. You're just rooting for him to get to the ball, and that's the end of the play. Like, it's over with. So, you know, I really did kind of see exactly what Marcus Freeman was. I saw that in January and then again today. I mean, it was just no surprise. Exactly what I expected.
Yeah. I mean, that linebacker position is really going to be interesting this spring in terms of just the number of good options they have there and how it all shakes out, right? Mentioned Jalen Snead, mentioned Jaden Osbury. And the thing with Drake Bowen too, and this is kind of the case with the wide receivers too. That was another thing that I was thinking is like Drake Bowen, it's going to be hard for him to be all in on baseball because if you're going to baseball, you want to play, right? Like you have KVA sitting there and Jaden Osbury sitting there and Jalen Snead sitting there. Preston Zinter sitting there, right? Kahan Ukia is sitting there, right? Like everyone is just kind of like, hey, I can't be not here because it's not like he is Jack Kaiser, right? And Jack Kaiser's sitting there. No, it's not like he's that where it's like, oh, I have all this other experience and you don't have any of that, right? So you do want to be around. You don't want other people taking your reps. That's going to be something that he needs to kind of
opportunities are vital when you're competing for this, right? Like, and like you have to take advantage of the opportunities, but you got to first where you can take advantage of them, you got to get them. And every time you don't get one, someone else is getting one. I think that's a good point you make there, Greg.
Yeah. And the same thing with wide receiver, right? Like, I think there's something to the fact that they have a lot of guys who can play positions and it's like, I have to be a playmaker because if I'm not, they're going to put in somebody else. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think Faison is a little bit, I think he's a little bit different in that respect because A, he's always been a playmaker and B, like he does have lacrosse, right? Like he is a lacrosse player. His professional career might be as a lacrosse player. So for him, it's a little bit different, but for the rest of them, like Jaden Harrison, right? If you want to be a slot guy, this is last season. You know, he doesn't have another opportunity. He doesn't have a junior, senior year. This is his last year. Same thing with Chris Mitchell. Like the cost of doing business for wide receivers is going to be very high, right? And so that, like, look, that is really like the one thing that can raise a room. It's that. It's just that I don't know. I got to play great in order to just see the field, not even be like the guy. I got to be awesome just to get out here. And that's what raises the room up. Rajon mentions Faison had 5 points versus Maryland. I don't know what the points thing means, but I know that
goals and assists, right?
Goals and assists. Okay, great. I know that he's featured on a lot of the Notre Dame lacrosse kind of social media stuff, right?
What a storybook start to your career, athletic career at Notre Dame. I mean, is there anything like it? I mean, I was kidding with my son back in the fall. I was like, you know, if this kid didn't play lacrosse, he just would have been like a decent high school football player. And he'd probably be telling his boys, like, I could play out there. I could do that. And they'd be like, no, you can't. Are you crazy? Oh, yeah, I could be out there right now dominating, catching touchdowns. And sure enough, he can.
That's a good point. Like he would not be at Notre Dame as a football player.
No,
if he wasn't lacrosse, like that. That's an excellent, excellent point.
And he could.
It makes you think, like, how many people are like that out there? Maybe that could have been us, Christian. Maybe that could have been you and me.
Hey, here's my thing: is I don't know. No one can tell me I'm not. I might be the best luge person in the history of the world.
Wow.
Right? Or a skeleton? I don't know. I could be the Michael Jordan of the skeleton.
That's true. Michael Jordan, we're looking at a elite loser over here. But you know what you got to do, Christian, if you want people to know about your skills, you got to get tape out there. You got to get film out there. You got to get good film out there. And if you want to get good film and showcase yourself, then you need to hit up VSR Media. Founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrizadeh, VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at vsrmediacompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106.
Greg is quickly becoming known for his transitions.
Got to be known for something, right? I'm the greatest. You're the greatest loser ever. I am the greatest ad read maker that has ever been. All right. I know you were watching Riley Leonard today. Let's hear it. Whatever it may be, good, bad, or indifferent. What did you see from him today?
So I'll say I watched him in the context of just curiosity, obviously. Mm-hmm. Also, like in the context of watching CJ Carr. So sometimes they'd be going against each other, not against each other, but you know, one after another. Mm-hmm. And you know, not everything it was perfect at all. I still kind of have some questions about his accuracy, right? Like, that's kind of a preconceived notion I have coming in, is like, how accurate is he as a quarterback? This is a good compliment I give quarterbacks a lot, is like, they're not a quarterback, they're a football player. Mm. I would say Riley Leonard's a football player more than a quarterback. I'd say the same thing about Brett Favre, Josh Allen, those guys, even Mahomes, football player. But with Riley Leonard, I want to see some more quarterback, right? Not that he just runs all the time or anything like that. He's a playmaker. I want to see the accuracy. I wasn't totally blown away by his accuracy today. But again, I wasn't watching him nonstop or tracking anything like that. Certainly, you know, looks the part in terms of his size, and he was tucking and running during one-on-ones when his guys couldn't get open. So he looked comfortable doing that. But there was a couple of throws that he missed. You know, I know there was the pick. Ben Morrison had a great one-handed pick. That was probably the play of the day. And then I was able to look up the scoreboard and watch the replay of it. It was like three yards out of bounds in one-on-ones on a deep ball. So that was a little bit something, you know, to watch. By no means do I think – I mean, Riley Leonard's going to be a starting quarterback against A&M. There's no doubt about it. Obviously, he's coming back from a surgery, maybe a little rusty, but I don't want to say it was a down day because I didn't track him specifically at all. Just overall, I still kind of do have some questions about his accuracy.
Noted, right? I mean, it's hard to it's hard to wave away that sort of thing, right? Like, I am not as concerned about it, but like, I do think we need to take the reports for what they are, especially after last year, right? Like, I think Sam Hartman came in and it was, you know, Matt reported a lot about how he didn't look comfortable, you know, and Tyler Buchner was looking better than him, didn't look comfortable, wasn't picking things up as quickly as you want. And then that manifested itself during the season, right? So I think we have to. Tyler Borgman asks, is this a situation we're monitoring? I think so. I think we should monitor this. I think we need to hear it's getting better, right? We need to hear it. Now, look, I did read a little bit of Matt's report on this, and you're going to want to go to irishsportsdaily.com to read the full thing, because this is a big report that Matt put out on his observations from practice today. So you're going to want to look at that. But he did note that he felt like Riley Leonard was more in command of what was going on out there than mm-hmm. even Sam Hartman did. And so he makes the direct comparison to Sam Hartman. And look, Matt is – he'll tell you. Like, if it's no good, he'll tell you, like, I don't like this, right? And so if he says it's better than he thought, the command is better than he thought, then I think that's a big deal. And I think that's important. It's important to note, but at the same time, we're gonna monitor the accuracy situation. Yeah.
And I wouldn't by any means, like, I would definitely agree. He definitely looked like in command, right? He didn't look confused out there or anything like that. He wasn't like, oh my God, like, I just had a terrible day and I missed mm-hmm. all these throws. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying, like, the way I came in with questions about CJ Carr's arm strength, and he answered those for me. I came in with similar questions about Leonard's accuracy, and I kind of still have. I'm not saying he had a terrible day or he stinks or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I did not watch him exclusively. I didn't track every throw he made or anything like that. I only saw the clips when I was kind of in passing, keeping my eye on CJ Carr, or if, you know, Riley happened to be thrown to one of the other freshmen or anything like that. And again, some curiosity, but yeah, something worth monitoring, but I don't think it's anything alarming. I wouldn't call it alarming or anything like that.
Not alarmed, intrigued is where we'll go with this.
There you go.
The DBs, Christian Gray, sounds like he was out with he had something of a hamstring problem, which we don't like. We don't like that. I was on with Locked On Irish. I was on with Tyler Wojak, and he asked for a bold prediction. And I said, I thought Christian Gray was going to be talked about as like up and coming elite cornerback. So the fact that he's hurt, what's got a hamstring thing going on, don't love to hear that. Right. But again, as noted, there's a break coming up, right? So he's another guy where it's like, hey, you feel a little tightness, let's not even get involved with it. We'll just shut you down, go into spring break, and then we'll come back hopefully ready to go on his end. What did you see from, I guess, Jaden Mickey today? Anything from him, anything from the DBs that stuck out to you?
Yeah, Jaden Mickey made a couple really, really good plays. He's active, right? So he made a couple very good plays, and he let everyone know about it. As well. And he also got beat deep. He got beat deep quite early in the team period. I don't remember if that was Gilbert or not, but it was kind of allowed, and you could tell the offense was ready to give it back to him. But, man, I love that swagger that he brings to the position. You know, it's excitement, it's confidence, and he backs it up on the field. Ben Morrison was Ben Morrison. I mean, he's out there. He was really, really good. I mentioned that competitive rep he had against Gilbert. He was doing that all the time. I mean, he's, you know, Ben Morrison was really, really impressive today as well. As far as the early enrollees go, Kenny Urlacher was okay. I watched him. I didn't see anything that concerned me. The one thing that I liked, he looked really, really comfortable going through individual drills, both in his back pedal and catching the ball. Also looked really, really good coming to, you know, and they did some angle tackle work. Obviously a lot of chatter forever will be around him. Does he grow into a linebacker? Mm. I'll tell you this, if he does, he's going to be great at covering guys out of the backfield. You know, maybe he's the kind of linebacker you can leave on the field, you know, when you have to go nickel or something like that. But he has tools, that they can use. It'll be interesting to see how he develops.
Does he have the frame?
I don't know. If I just saw him today and I didn't know his dad was Brian Urlacher, I wouldn't look at him and say, oh, that's a future linebacker.
Yeah.
But you never know.
Well, no, I mean, so there's his style of play, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's his frame. Mm-hmm. It's like, so someone like Teddy Rezac, like if you told me he was going to go in the linebacker, it's like, yeah, he's 6'3 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And he's really long arms. So it's like he can add good weight and stuff. I think Kenny the Urlacher, he doesn't have that kind of size. Like if he puts on like 20, 30 pounds, like can he carry that? I don't know if he can. So that'll be interesting to monitor as well. Same thing with Luke Tolich back there. I really think there's something there. I just do. So looking at the practice report that Matt put out, the first team offensive line was left tackle Jagusaw, Pat Coogan at left guard, Ashton Craig center, Billy Shrouth right guard, and then it was Tosh Baker at right tackle there. I mean, look, there's going to be a battle for those guard spots specifically. Interesting to me that Rocco Spindler, when he came in, he repped at right guard as well, you know? And so like, are Spindler and Shrouth competing for that other guard spot? Because if yes, then I think that offensive line is going to be the offensive line, in my opinion. Because I just don't see how Rocco, coming off of an injury and given the physical abilities that Billy Shrouth has, like I just don't see how Rocco can kind of beat him out, right? Like to me, the competition is between Coogan and Spindler there. Again, if Mill Wagner's not big enough, like that, it's got to be Tosh Baker, just from a size standpoint.
I mean, Freeman basically said it's Tosh's to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if that's what it is, then I think that's how they're going to go, you know, which, you know, there's, you think about that with the fact that they, you know, or we kind of know through reporting that they were looking for an offensive tackle in the portal, didn't find what they liked. And look, maybe it's one of those things where it's like, if we can we want someone who we know would be clearly better than Tosh, but maybe they think that's a really high bar, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe there's a specific, I don't know, person, couple of people who they think might come in or whatever. Maybe they're just like, it's got to be like a really good player, right? Maybe Tosh Baker will be fine. Like Jamie compared him to Josh Lugg a few times in terms of just like that, having that kind of ability or having that kind of a season. I think Notre Dame could be fine if they got like Josh Lugg caliber play at right tackle this year. And they'll be totally fine with that. But it's interesting. And it'll be interesting to monitor. I mean, it would be great for Tosh Baker since he hung around the program. Like, I think he's been, I don't want to say rumored because I never really heard a rumor that he was going to leave, but like, I think everyone kind of said, well, he's got to, he's got to move on, right? Like, he's not going to have a spot, right? But he hung in there. If he was able to get his position, I think that would be really cool for him. Marcus Freeman talked a lot about Mike Denbrock and his kind of, you know, his competitiveness and what kind of a leader he was. I'm wondering if you had anything about that today from Mike Denbrock and kind of if how that manifested itself in practice.
Yeah. You know, you'd see Denbrock, he walks around with a lot of confidence as well. I don't know if we mentioned this or we talked about before, but, you know, after somebody made a great one-on-one play, and the offense was hooting and hollering. Freeman referenced this in his press conference too, but the offense was hooting and hollering and ready to run down the field and celebrate, you know, almost like an and-one video style where everyone comes to the field. And Denbrock's yelling, get back. And if you didn't know, you thought he was upset. And he was yelling him to hurry up or get back in the huddle. And he's like, that's just what we do. And it's just the thing of like, let's get them to understand this is not going to be rare. It's not going to be rare that a receiver is going to make a play 40 yards on the field. And based on where the heck he was last fall, that's not very surprising to see dudes, you know, just jumping up and making plays like that. So I think that kind of, you know, attitude can really, really kind of filter its way through the program. And Freeman talked about it. I think this is the moment, but like Freeman and Denbrock, they were dying laughing shortly after that, right? So I think Freeman might have said something to him, and Denbrock was laughing. So you can see that they have a very good rapport. Mike Denbrock's a very easy guy to get along with. I think the quarterbacks and everyone in the whole offensive room is going to appreciate that. And he has that swagger of having coached a Heisman Trophy winner, a guy who's going to be a top pick in the draft, the best receivers in the country, an explosive offense. That's who he is right now. And you can tell he's parlaying that into trying to get his new team or new old team to have that same attitude. And I think he's right to do that. Now's the time to do that. You're not going to be Jane Daniels' former coach forever, right? Mm-hmm. A year from now, you're going to be a Notre Dame coach. So instilling that kind of attitude and that confidence could go a long way.
I wonder if Marcus told him like, hey, this sort of thing didn't happen a ton last year. Cause he kind of alluded to that in the, in the PC, like, we didn't, he said, I think we hit more deep passes today than we have in, you know, recent memory or whatever.
Yeah.
Which kind of speaks to the types of players that they have, right. That they didn't have even on the roster in previous years. So, it's good. I mean, I think the part of this that people overlook when it, like I kind of mentioned it before, when it comes to Denbrock is just the fact that he knows how to build an offense and he knows how to get the players to execute the things that he wants. And I think that is so much more important than the actual X's and O's, you know, like people talk about, you know, Jared Parker and the kind of the difference there. And it's like, oh, he didn't do enough motion or he didn't do enough this or that, the other thing. Sure. Right. Like there's always some aspect of that when it comes to X's and O's and execution and actual play calls and specific play calls in specific situations. But I think it's as much as anything else. It's just the fact that he knows how to teach it. He knows how to get them to perform the way that he wants them to perform. Right. And he knows how to get everyone on the same page. And I think that is more important than any of the other stuff. Right. Because look, you can get, you just got to get your guys to the point where, like, yeah, you want to get your team in the right call. You want to get them into the right situation with the defense and the time of game and all those other things. But you want their execution level to be the point where it doesn't even matter really what you call. I mean, that's like, look at, you know, I hate bringing it up. Your favorite team, Michigan, like, oh, they, please, come on. They, no, but it's like, it's true. Like they ran the ball. What was it? 30 something straight times against Penn State or whatever it is. Like at some point Penn State's like, hey, they're not throwing, like, but it doesn't, to a certain point, it doesn't matter because you drill it into them to the point where it's like, we can execute against anything we see. It doesn't matter what we see. It doesn't matter what they're in. It doesn't matter what we're in. We can execute it. And I think having someone like Denbrock allows for that to happen. So that's, well,
what was most important, impressive with that, with Michigan, wasn't just that it doesn't matter what they're in. It's like that they had always prepared, already knowing what the defense was going to do. And now it doesn't matter if we have to play beforehand, right? So that was what was most impressive. So for, you know, the people out there, I think I'm actually believe I'm a Michigan fan. They're a bunch of cheaters.
No, Michigan. Well, it's not a question of whether we ask you. It's just the way it is, right? It's not up for any of us to debate.
So we went to, quick side story. We just got back from Disney World a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm at the age now where I like to do anything to embarrass my 15-year-old. Mm. And he gets embarrassed by anything I do. So there's just college everywhere, right? So anytime someone walks by with a college shirt or hat, I'm yelling, Roll Tide, you know, go Gators, you know, go Tigers, whatever it is, War Eagle, you know, nonstop. Yeah. And he's like, Dad, I swear, I never saw more Michigan shirts. These guys come out of it. I've never seen Michigan gear before. Everyone was wearing Michigan. So that was the only one. We wouldn't say anything to gold blue. But by the end of the week, I even got him and my wife. It was basically, you get a point if you can get a response from somebody. So these Michigan fans, I don't know where the hell they've been, but they're out of the blue now, man.
So my daughter's team, I'm coaching her flag team. And so there's two conferences. There's Pac-12 and there's Big Ten. And it's like the old conferences, right? Like, there's no realignment in the flag football, you know, youth game, right? So it's like you get to pick three teams from each conference, right? So obviously I'm not picking USC and I'm not picking Michigan, right? Like, that's just a no. Well, so I picked UCLA, and so we're UCLA this year. And a bunch of the parents were all upset. And then there's a Michigan as well. And so then it's like there's a USC and then there's a Michigan, and it's just, I don't even want to. And they're actually, and the funny thing is like the Michigan team, it turns out, is actually good. So I can't escape any of this stuff. So it is what it is with those two schools. So, all right, Christian, I'm going to let you go. Thank you all. Thank you for all your insights and for stepping in for Jamie today. Jamie will be back on the next show. Just had something come up last minute today. So he'll be back. We'll talk more about spring and everything that's come out of that. There's going to be some more information that comes out. Check out irishsportsdaily.com for all your information, Christian's report, match report, and all things of that nature. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please hit subscribe. Please hit the like. Please hit the notification bell so you know whatever it is. We are going live. We'll be back next week to talk more Notre Dame spring ball. Have a good weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Keep hitting and hustling.